This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV program on Free Speech TV and on our website. The story of a horrific hanging of a Black Muslim teen in Washington state has slowly started to break into the media. 18-year-old Ben Musa Keita was reported missing from his home in Lake Stevens on November 27th. His body was found more than a month later on January 9th, hanging 50 feet high off of a tree. Initially, the medical examiner ruled the death a suicide, but after Keita's family pressed, the cause of death was ruled to be, quote, undetermined. The Council on American Islamic Relations' Washington chapter has urged the FBI to investigate the death, which is disturbingly reminiscent of a lynching. Given the current political climate and the rise in hate crimes, could it be that Keita's death was a murder and a hate crime? Joining me to help answer that question is Arslan Bukhari. He's the Executive Director of CARE Washington. Welcome to the program, Arslan.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Before we get into what might have happened, let's just dig into some of the circumstances as far as you know. Who was Ben Musa Keita? From what you've heard his family say about him, what sort of a person was he? And is it, how likely is it that his death was a suicide as it had been originally ruled?
So thanks again for having me. And, you know, I'll answer the last question first. So we don't know what caused the young man's death. This family is an all-American family. Ben and his two other siblings were born and raised in the Seattle area. And Ben was a student at a high school, but he was also taking college classes at Everett Community College as a running start student. And so he was slated to graduate this coming June from high school with many college credits that he took during his time as a running start student at Everett Community College. So really an outstanding student, also worked a part-time job at a fast food place. Really all-American family, you know, U.S. citizens, born, raised here. As far as the kids, the parents are U.S. citizens, registered to vote. They've been living in Lake Stevens for about 17 years and in the Seattle area since 1995. You know, it's a wonderful family, and, you know, our heart really goes out to them. The family really, their greatest hope is for the public to come forward with any information they may have about what led to the young man's death, any circumstances, any knowledge of any persons involved. We're asking the public to come forward and contact the FBI, Seattle office, and also to call 911 simply and report what they know. And the family really is hoping that someone out there might have some knowledge that can help law enforcement resolve this case.
So he went missing on November 27th, and there was a search of the area. It's a wooded area. It's a beautiful place, Lake Stevens, you know, bordering water. And they didn't find his body initially, I understand, but then it was found January 9th, more than a month later. How is it that his body wasn't found sooner?
Well, we don't know. So that's exactly what the investigation, a comprehensive investigation, will unveil is, you know, exactly what transpired between the time that he went missing and the time that his body was found. There were searches that were conducted, but there's all sorts of possibilities. We don't want to speculate. We just want to make sure that the FBI enters and conducts a full comprehensive investigation and brings answers to this family that's grieving, but also the family is wondering, well, what happened to our son? And they want to make sure a comprehensive investigation is conducted, a careful investigation that brings forth some facts about what may have happened.
So was the body found in an area that had been searched initially?
To our knowledge, it had been searched. So again, that leaves many possibilities. The last search that was conducted in that area was apparently, to our knowledge, on December 7th, and the body was found on January 9th. So that's more than a month-long period, and things could have happened in that time. So again, we just don't know what transpired, and we want to have a full investigation to find out what happened. And the wooded area also, one more thing to clarify, it's not some rural area. This is a suburban development with many homes surrounding the woods. And as you know, in many developments, they clear out some trees to build some homes, and then many trees still border people's backyards. So it wasn't more than a few feet away from someone's backyard. And again, the family really is hoping that someone out there may have some knowledge that can help police fully investigate and resolve this case and bring forth some answers for the family.
So when they found this young man's body, and he was only 18, so still really a child, It was found hanging off of a tree 50 feet up off of the ground.
Well, yeah, so the rope was hanging off of a branch that was 50 feet off the ground. So the branch that was hanging from was 50 feet high off the ground.
The branch was 50 feet high, I see.
The branch was, yeah. And so the young man was much, much lower.
I see.
And so it was a very long rope. And, you know, again, just so many pieces that need to be fully investigated in all their totality to bring forth some answers about what exactly did happen. This was, of course, one of the factors that the medical examiner's office noted as to why they determined this to be, well, as to why they concluded that the investigation into the manner of death resulted in undetermined as the manner of death. You know, this is a very long rope off a very tall branch. And they also noted that many days after a search had been conducted is when the body was found, and that it was not found when the searches were conducted in early December.
Okay, so all of this becomes relevant because we live in a climate where Muslims are demonized and criminalized. People of color are demonized and criminalized. This young man wasn't just Muslim, he was black. And of course, it becomes relevant given the history of lynchings in this country. That entire context makes this a potentially really important story that fits into a larger picture, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way in which he was found really was shocking. I mean, when you see a person, who's African-American hanging from a tree, from a rope, it really was shocking. And, just like any death, but this just added to the seriousness of the case. And that's why I really want to make sure that a comprehensive investigation is conducted. No stone is left unturned. Any leads are followed up with and pursued. Any persons with any knowledge of this case are interviewed. That any footage of any cameras, anything else that's out there is brought forth, is examined by law enforcement. So we can really get some answers. This is just really a shocking case and a really serious case.
I want to play the short excerpt of a video taken from a press conference where Ben's father, Ben Musa Keita's father, Ibrahim Keita, spoke as well about what had happened to his son. This was a CARE press conference that took place just recently.
Ben was a happy young man. He was a generous and kind young man that I have ever known. We believe that somewhere, someone must know something about this case, and we urge people to come forward and contact the police.
How important, Arslan, was it that for the family to really push for the medical examiner to take another look at this case? I mean, to the family, of course, it made no sense that their son turned up like this, and the initial ruling was a suicide. Was it the family's persistence that led to the medical examiner sort of reevaluating the circumstances?
You know, the family reported to us that they had to really make sure that they were motivating law enforcement to investigate. They, this is their son. Any mother, any father loves their son or daughter, and they wanted to make sure this case and this investigation is taken seriously. They had to pay some visits to police to motivate them to investigate this further. They also communicated, I believe, I actually don't know if they've communicated directly with the medical examiner's office. I'll have to find out. Mm. But it did take them quite a bit of effort to make sure that, everything was looked at. Any information that was found was considered in any decision that was made. And that's, of course, our job as well, to make sure that any investigation that's conducted is thoroughly done and comprehensively done.
Yeah. We should also remember that the history of lynching of African Americans in this country is a really sordid, one of the worst chapters in American history. And that often when the bodies were discovered, they were ruled as suicide, right? I mean, that's basically what happened to this child's body. It was ruled as suicide, even though it seems very strange that a perfectly happy man with a bright future would go missing and then suddenly, be hanging off of a rope from a 50-foot-high branch. How important is it for us to remind ourselves that historically lynchings were dismissed as suicides?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think, there's a great study that was, a museum that's actually being done by the Equal Justice Institute in Montgomery, Alabama. Again, just want to emphasize in this case, we don't have the facts, and we really want to make sure the facts come forth. The parents' greatest hope is that someone out there has information about what may have happened so that, a clear answer about what had led to this man's death comes forward. Be concerned about this, and we want to make sure again that clear answers are brought forth with a comprehensive investigation. There's a lot to be shocked and concerned about in this case, including the historical background as well.
Can you give us a sense if in Seattle or even the Lake Stevens area that you're seeing rising sort of verbal abuse or things that could be classified as hate crimes against Muslims? We know nationwide it's a trend. I mean, the Southern Poverty Law Center has put it out, CARE has conducted studies. We know that Islamophobia is a big and well-funded industry. But we think of Washington State as, one of those liberal states. At the state level, do you see a similar trend that matches the national trend of Islamophobia?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, just to emphasize, in this case, we don't know what the
we don't cause know. It just happened that this is a black Muslim boy, right? So,
yeah.
So these are concerns. You're right. We don't know what happened to this particular boy.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't know what happened. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, I don't think, according to our numbers, Washington State is no different from any other state. Our office in Seattle covers the state of Washington and received about 400 cases or complaints from Washington State residents last year in 2016. We also saw that just as nationwide hate crimes had risen back in 2015 to historical highs, 2015 was the year when we saw the highest number of anti-Muslim hate crimes reported in U.S. history. 2015 was, not any other year before that. So that, of course, is a concern. The numbers from Washington State are no less than numbers from comparable states where CARE chapters exist. So at least according to reported cases of discrimination, we can't tell a difference between Washington State and other states. We're part of this country. I think people consume the same press coverage and media content, entertainment media as everybody else. And I think one thing to note about hate crimes, we also have research on a website called islamfactcheck.org. And on there, we have posted some research that finds that, primetime news coverage between 2007 and 2013 of Islam and Muslims was found by Media Tenor. Media Tenor found that between 2007 and 2013, Islam was not only the most mentioned religion in primetime news, but that most of that coverage was negative. In fact, they found that 80% of that coverage was defamatory, and only 3% of primetime news coverage for these between 2007 and 2013 showed realistic depictions of Islam and Muslims. And then, of course, there's research that shows that news coverage and entertainment media content can have an effect on people's prejudices. We also found that last year, about 50% of the U.S. voters across party lines supported then-candidate Trump's ban on Muslims. So it's no wonder that a public that has consumed about 8 years' worth of really defamatory media portrayals, both in news and entertainment media, would be so ready to take on a proposal like that. So again, separate from this case, there is a concerning rise in Islamophobia and public perceptions of Muslims that are far removed from the reality. Again, the reality shows that according to every known research on American Muslims known to mankind, it paints a picture of American Muslims as mainstream, middle class, leading wholesome lives. A Gallup poll found that American Muslim women are the second highest educated religious group of women in the country, which goes counter to the common portrayals of American Muslim women. And there's many more facts on IslamFactCheck.org that really paint a picture of a community that's doing quite well, pursuing the American dream. And American Muslims are Americans. I mean, one third of the slaves that were brought to our nation's shores many centuries ago were Muslims at the time that they arrived. One third of American Muslims are African American, like this young man's family.
And that's a really important point, because black Muslims lie at the intersection of race and religion in a very important way.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think we get often complaints of cases by African-American Muslims of, you know, a combination of racial and religious discrimination. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. I think fair-minded Americans, fair-minded everyday people and leaders have a duty at this time, I think, to really speak out publicly and vocally by sending emails to their local media editors, letters at nytimes.com, letters at USAtoday.com, simply sending emails, letting them know what they know about their local Muslim neighbor, or just affirming basic American values of religious freedom is so much needed, and it's so easy to do for the average person. We all have a voice, and I hope that we all use our voice to educate fellow Americans well beyond our bubble about the real lives of American Muslims and about our basic American values of religious freedom. That's how we really educate millions.
Going back to the case, finally, of Ben Musa Keita, the 18-year-old boy that we started discussing this on this conversation, are there specific ways in which Americans can support this family through this very difficult time? I mean, obviously, in the area, if anybody knows, like you said, they need to contact authorities. But beyond that, are there ways in which people can show support for what, you know, must be just an unimaginable time of grief for this family?
Sure, of course. I mean, I think we're asking leaders and everyday people to echo the call, to publicly call on the FBI to investigate this. I think the FBI realizes this is a very important case, and I think it would really be helpful for government leaders and other leaders to also publicly call for a full FBI investigation of this case so that our law enforcement leaders understand that the entire community and our leaders, including the governor and others, are concerned about this, and that motivates them to then open a full investigation. And going forward, I think in everyday life, if you know a Muslim person or have a friend, coworker, be an ally by helping them file complaints. If you see someone being discriminated against, they may not know the right avenue to take, and if you do, then help them do that. That's the best way you can sort of respond to events that take place, to your own friends who might be Muslim or any other minority. And of course, as I said, proactively, just using the power of the pen by simply emailing editors.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Arslan. Good luck to you. We will continue to keep our eye on this story and see if any progress is made. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
My guest is Arslan Bukhari. He's the executive director of CARE Washington. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.